Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Blog Talk Radio's Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy for Saturday, December 11th. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you live from Chicago, Illinois, on the second Saturday of each month. Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy is an interactive live internet radio show that focuses on how to take advantage of the opportunities that life sends your way. The program explores obstacles overcome by ordinary people with extraordinary results and what inspires or motivates them to take positive actions that make their dreams a reality. I know a little about that myself, as I have had 10 careers so far. I started out as a fashion model, and then I was a rock and roll singer on the MCA label. I've been a corporate consultant, an adjunct professor, and today I am a professional speaker, an author, a coach, a blogger, and a radio show host. Let's set the tone for today's program. Be of good cheer. Do not think of today's failures, but of the success that may come tomorrow. You have set yourself a difficult task, but you will succeed if you persevere, and you will find a joy in overcoming obstacles. That is by Helen Keller. Our show today, we had planned on having Zandra Rhodes, the author of Living the Ebony Life, as our show guest, to discuss her book, Living the Ebony Life, Emails from the Plantation. We had a little glitch, and so while she is not here, I am prepared to have a discussion around that topic. If she does call into the line, then we will be lucky enough to hear from the author herself why she called the book Living the Ebony Life and Life on the Plantation. I'd like to begin by talking about some of the things that Zandra has in her book. For example, one of the things she mentions in the book is that she worked with a person that she dubs the man, which I find not very endearing, but a really great way of her not naming names while getting her point across in the book. Some of the things that were mentioned in Living the Ebony Life was very interesting to me. For example, there's a passage there where she says that internet usage is frowned upon and that there is an 8-track cassette tape player for the young workers to use. And she mentions her surprise that an 8-track cassette player was installed in her cubicle. 1999, 2005, we're in 2010 now. But apparently the junior level office spaces just did not have the top-notch equipment. There are a lot of people like the man that Zandra talks about that are in corporate America today. They come in all shapes and sizes. In fact, there are so many of them that I had a recent blog post that I called the sociopath, the psychopath, and the bully at work. And in it, I'm talking about how charming, charismatic, well put together they are. And it sounded to me as I read Zandra's book that this man was one of those kinds of people. I'm not saying for sure he's a sociopath or a psychopath, but a key piece of identifying these people seems to match the behavior of this person. For example, I mentioned in that blog post that a book called Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. And I speak of the fact that psychopaths actually prosper in organizations because they operate well in that kind of a setting especially today with the chaotic change going on and the economy and the state it's in, they have found themselves a haven. Sad to say, but some companies focus on promoting those kinds of people. It says in the book, they say, unfortunately, there are some individuals in the business world who allow the responsibilities of leadership and the perks of power to override their moral sense. And as I read the book by Miss Rhodes, I noted that the man, as she calls him, was one of those kinds of people, because he didn't seem to care how his behavior impacted those around him. And in fact, when push came to shove, he got to the point where he would just remove the mask of civility and show people who he really, really was. Memos were actually planted around the office to help Sandra when she first got to the company to know and understand how the man operates behind the scenes to malign the junior staff. In Living the Ebony Life, she says she didn't anticipate when she got the job that remaining at Ebony required that she remain in her place. Shocking to me, as Ebony magazine has always been one of those magazines that I invested my hard-earned dollars in and really looked forward to reading the articles and finding the taglines of people like Miss Rhodes, who were the editors there. It's absolutely amazing to me how some people can just walk over the people they're supposed to embrace, the people they're supposed to lift up, the people they're supposed to mentor and coach and bring to the next level in their careers. She says, Zandra says, that because of the man's war games with the other person she calls the head, she was double screwed, because the head would give a directive and the man would reverse it. Now think about it, listeners. Imagine if you're working for a person like that. Imagine if a person like that is your manager. What would you do? What could you do? Sometimes the only thing you can do is to get out of there and find yourself somewhere else to work, because that's the only way that you could get away from them. Going back to those psychopaths, one of the things we learn in that book, Snakes in Suits, is that psychopaths are without conscience. They're incapable of empathy, guilt, or loyalty to anyone but themselves. Sounds to me kind of like the man, as she calls him. The man was the kind of person that would actually tell his direct report to her face that she wasn't important. She had no credentials. And in one instance, she went to Boca Raton, and he said, "Why are you going there? You're not a beauty editor. You have no credentials. You're just an associate. You're just filling a void." And then he began writing memos as a stunt to block any threat to his power and perks, and to block his own direct report from getting ahead. And the interesting thing is that at Ebony, he actually was rewarded for this behavior. He actually got promotions from this behavior. He actually took credit for other people's work. Has anyone of you ever had that happen to you while you were at work, where you work for someone who, when you come up with an idea, they just steal the idea from you, claim it as their own, and present it to upper management as though they were the ones who came up with the idea? There's a lot of them out there. Zandra just happened to run into one of them, the man, at Ebony while she worked there. As a matter of fact, Another example of the descriptive for a psychopath is that these kinds of people, like psychopaths or the man, may feel justified in reaping the rewards in proportion to the size of the organization that they lead, arguing that their extravagancies seem excessive only to those who have little hope of being rewarded in that fashion. And I'm going to tell you, I've worked with them myself. I've worked with those people who, as far as they're concerned, you're one of the little people. I once worked for a manager who said to me, "Oh, I'm your new manager. That means you do all the work and I get all the credit." A woman, no less. And by the way, sociopaths and psychopaths come in male or female. It's not the sole domain of any one gender. So you may be working with a female who exhibits these kinds of behavior and wondering what her problem is. How come she doesn't feel empathy? Aren't women the ones who are supposed to be the protectors of the species and the ones who do feel empathy? Well, here's the thing that I found by studying these people. They have a switch off in their brain. They're sick. They can't help it. The reason why they can't see you as someone who is deserving, the reason why they can just take away your hard-earned work and put their own name on it, the reason why they can just always keep you down while raising themselves up is because they don't have that connection in their heads. They don't have that button in their brain that gives them feelings of empathy for other people. They just don't. So when you're going, "What's wrong with you? How can you treat people that way?" they give you that stupid look that they often do of, "What's wrong with you and why are you such a doofus and a fool?" Because since they can't think like the rest of us, they think that when we have empathy and we care for others around us, that we're the idiots. Research says that the psychopath is a near-perfect, invisible human predator. It says that the difference between a psychopath's approach and a non-psychopathic approach lies in the motivation to take unfair and callous advantage of people. Psychopaths simply don't care if what they say and do hurts people, as long as they get what they want. And they're very good at hiding this fact. They're very good at hiding it. That's why they're also, as I mentioned earlier, charismatic, well-dressed. They have an air about them because when they first get into your company or when you first start reporting to them, they are checking you out. That's what they do. They start out by figuring out what will work for you? What's going to tip you in their direction? What's going to make you give them what they want and do what they want, when they want, how they want? And once they figure it out, watch out. I've learned through studying this that they have great skills that make them different from the rest of us. First of all, they're motivated and have a talent for reading people, for sizing them up very, very quickly. They identify what your likes and dislikes are, what your motives and needs are, what your weak spots and vulnerabilities are, what your buttons are that they can push to make you squeal. They, more than anybody else, are always ready to push those buttons for you, baby. They also come across as having really excellent communication skills, speaking skills, but in many cases the skills are fake because they are using those skills just to manipulate, use, and abuse people. That's all they're doing.
And I fucking love it. I do. I love it.
Hello? You're on the air. Hello, caller?
Yes.
Do you have a comment or a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was actually talking to somebody, and I wasn't trying to talk to you. I was just listening on the radio. I'm loving what you guys are saying.
Okay.
You know?
Continue, please. I will continue with the program. Thank you. As I was saying, you have to watch out for these psychopaths because some of the skills that they have are their readiness to just sometimes jump right into a conversation when you least expect it without any of the social inhibitions that hamper most people. I'm sure one or two of you have had that happen where you're out there having a conversation and these people just jump into it out of nowhere and mess it up. They can very effectively take what they learn about a person and then use that same thing they learned about a person against that person as they interact with him or her. They know exactly what to say, they know how to say it, and they use it to exert influence upon you. That's what they do. In the great card game of life, baby, psychopaths know what cards you hold, and they cheat. They cheat like nobody's business because they're near perfectly invisible. You don't even realize. In fact, they do very, very sneaky things like a woman may be dating one of these psychopaths because, like I said, they're charming and charismatic and they dress well and so on. And the next thing you know, nothing she does is ever good enough. You know, she's going to go out and he's looking her up and down and going, "You're not wearing that, are you? You look stupid." You know, so she changes it and he'll never be satisfied till she does what he wants. All he's doing is manipulating her, getting her to do what he wants her to do, how he wants her to do, when he wants her to do, and that's part of taking an unfair and callous advantage of her. They don't care if what they say or do hurt people, as long as they get what they want, and they're really, really good at getting what they want and at hiding that's what they're up to. They use bullying tactics. In her book, Sandra actually speaks to the fact that the man used bullying tactics on her to get her to do what he wants. She mentioned in the book that she would, that whenever there were gifts or swag or whatever you want to call it, he would always take the best of the best for himself and leave the rest, that of course he's not interested in, for everybody else. She said that when stars and celebrities came, he'd go hang out with them, and he would make sure that the people who report to him wouldn't get a chance to go hang out with those people and get to know them. Because, you know, his foot, in my opinion, was firmly planted on their throats to keep them in their place. This at an employer who is supposed to be focused on helping people of color and helping their employees to have a better life and to be more successful in the corporation to the point where they created this organization in the first place just to fill that void. I liked how she mentioned that. She says, by the way, there was no consent form anywhere in the studios there. Just an oracle. I like that too. Her little game players, you know. She had an oracle to give her the heads up when the man was setting her up. In her case, she was really lucky. She may not sound lucky, but when you think about it, she was lucky because not everybody's lucky enough to have somebody who's got their back, who's an oracle, who knows what's going on, and who's going to take the time to let you know, hey, girlfriend, or hey, brother, look up for a second. You need to be aware of this thing or that thing. Not all of us are that lucky. So in a sense, as I read her book, I became aware that Zandra was protected, in a sense, from his warlike tactics. She said, "The last thing I needed was to be caught in the middle of a turf war that had nothing at all to do with the content of the magazine." She says, finally, she became a casualty of war. As one boss told her to shoot a story idea that the other boss told her to pull pictures instead. And this power struggle, she mentions, boiled down to her receiving 15 boxes of sample items and then having to send them all back unopened a day before the shoot. Go figure. So I'm going to manage you, and my job is to lift you up and help you learn and grow and mentor you, and then at every single turn, I'm going to be there like a blocker, blocking you, a brick wall. You turn left, there it is. Turn right, there it is. It's no wonder that when that time came and it was time for her to go, she was so ready. She was so ready to go that she just said, okay, and didn't even take it personally. And in my opinion, where she's at now, she's doing way better than she ever did there anyway. At least she's in control of her own destiny, which is what this show is all about, finding yourself, living your dreams, and being happy. I'm sure she's happier, in fact. And on top of that, she's expanded out into the world and is the editor over at Indigo Magazine, which is one of my favorite magazines, by the way, plug, plug. What she didn't realize is that he wasn't just a bully. This person, if you look at what is defined as the domain and traits of the psychopath, this person practically fits it to a T. It says, from an interpersonal perspective, the person that's psychopath is superficial, grandiose, and deceitful. Sounds like the man to me. And as far as effective, the person lacks remorse, lacks empathy, and doesn't accept responsibility. Sounds like him again. And when it comes to lifestyle, the person's impulsive, they lack goals, and they're irresponsible. I think it's irresponsible to be so intent on blocking your direct report that you harm the very institution that you are supposed to be working for. So he matches that too. And then antisocial. It says the person has poor behavioral controls, the psychopath. They have adolescent antisocial behavior and adult antisocial behavior. Well, I don't know what he did as an adolescent, but I am sure that anyone would agree when they read what he's done did to Sandra while she was working at Ebony, that that would match adult antisocial behavior. This person wasn't trying to help people. He was trying to help himself only. And what's amazing to me is, and what I can't understand is, what was wrong with all those people who were running the organization? Were there no checks and balances, no 360-degree feedback? Did no one else care either? I mean, there's a possibility there. Maybe they knew what was going on, they just didn't care. When I reschedule Zandra for the show, I will be happy to ask her that and see if she knows the answer to that one. Like I said, I think this guy was a psychopath. Because based on the assessment there and the technical results of does he match these four sections criteria, he sounds to me like he matches that. And by the way, you can find also on the web a test that you can check the answers off to see if that person that you yourself are reporting to or having a relationship with is themselves a psychopath. And it will tell you right away I also named my blog post The Psychopath, The Bully, The Psychopath, The Sociopath, and The Bully at Work, because I teach bullying to lots of the women in my programs. And as a trainer, I have to tell you, there's a ton of them in the workplace. In my mind, it's as though these three types are becoming more pervasive. In corporate America, the worse the economy becomes, because they feel like, well, what are you going to do about it? You can't go anywhere. You can't do anything. You can't find any job. There aren't any out here. So just sit there and take it and like it. And that's how they treat you. The bullies. I actually had a bully in one of my classes once. And she sat there. She had people on her right and people on her left. And she said, these are my direct reports. And when I described the behaviors of a bully, she was so mad. She was so pissed that she attacked me, started verbally attacking me in the program, letting me know what she thought. And what she didn't realize is, and what most of these bullies and psychopaths and sociopaths don't realize, is that when they behave the way they behave, they're not fooling anybody. What they're actually doing is revealing themselves to everyone around them. I mean, this guy at Ebony, the man, obviously, the oracle who was leaving things on Zandra's seats. This man was behaving like a bully and acting psychopathic. He had no empathy, not just for her, if you read the book, but for everybody that reported to him, the whole team. And again, I want to say, if you are one of those people who is working for somebody like that, know that there's hope. Know that people are doing something about it. Because right now, the state of Illinois has anti-bullying laws that you can use to protect yourself. Yes, it does. And that's why I encourage people to check with the Bullying Institute. Yep, there's such a place. There's a bullyinginstitute.org, and when you go there, it will tell you all of the recourses that you have available to you if you're working for a maniac like the man that Zandra worked for at Ebony Magazine. In fact, because of all of this, when Ebony put themselves on the market and I heard that they were going to be purchased, I wasn't even slightly shocked. I mean, how do you run a business when you treat your people like that? How do you run a business when you have a manager like that and you know that they're going to be driving out the best talent all the time? What happens is that the finest people in your field, in your industry, will not come to work for you. So as that kind of person, this sociopathic bully, pushes people out the door, more and more you're going to have what's left is not the best people. And not having the best people makes it difficult for you to compete. And now that you can't compete, you're going to find yourself in the position that Ebony found themselves in, which is, you're getting sold, baby. Sorry. You can't make any money. You can't be successful because you don't have the people that you need to help you to be successful. You just don't have them. The word is out. They're staying away from you in droves. And then one day, the content that you provide in the magazine is the kind of content that's trash. Nobody's interested in it. And they won't buy your magazine, and the next thing you know, the word is out, and people are sharing it with everybody else. Don't even bother. Don't go there. It's a bad place to work. And then you're either out of business or somebody else has to buy you. Sorry. Sorry, Ebony. You did it to yourself. There's a book called What Would Machiavelli Do? And it's by one of my favorite writers. His name is Stanley Bing. He's a smarty pants, tongue-in-cheek kind of writer. And I actually have that book and love it because he tells it like it is, you know. He says, in the book he claims that he's going to tell you how to get what you want when you want it, whether you deserve it or not, without fear, without emotion, without worrying about anything, without finger-wagging morality or any of that crap. He says, here's what you do. First of all, be cold-hearted. Replace decency and thoughtfulness with insensitivity and hard-heartedness. And you know what? That's exactly how they are. It's like the door to decency has been slammed shut. And anything goes. Some people just work really hard to be bad. Some people are just totally narcissistic. And they're unpredictable. As Sandra wrote in her book, the man was so unpredictable, she never knew whether she was coming or going. He'd tell her to do one thing, change it to something else. He'd tell her to do something, she'd do it. He'd say, I never told you to do that. Sound like somebody you work with or someone you know works with? They're unpredictable. They're mean. They have big mood swings. And they're always in a towering rage, yelling and screaming at people. They're ruthless. Completely crushing people and laughing when they hear their bones break because they get a thrill out of it. That's what those psychopaths and bullies are like. The difference, though, between the psychopath and the bully is that a bully is really a weak person. You know, a bully is really a person who is has low self-esteem, and they're trying to pump themselves up on the back of others by the way that they treat other people, and in order for them to feel better about themselves, they have to make other people feel bad. The psychopath, on the other hand, like I said earlier, they just have a switch loose in their head. They don't show any empathy because they don't know what empathy is. They're incapable of having empathy for somebody because they just don't have that connection in their brain. A bully can learn how to change their behavior and adjust. And sometimes can change their ways and become a better person. And maybe even be a person that helps bust other bullies in a company or in your family or wherever. Whereas a psychopath, that's never going to happen, honey. I'm sorry. Because they just don't have that empathy switch on. The sad thing, though, is for a lot of opportunistic psychopaths, whether they're in your company or on the street or in your family or in the boardroom, their egregious acts are simply business as usual. That's just how we do things, honey. That's just the way it is. A lot of them also live a parasitic lifestyle. Think about it. They live off the work of others rather than their own efforts. A lot of them don't even know how to do anything, but they know how to live off of the achievements of other people by taking credit for their work. Some of them are just drifters and moochers and wastrels with a terrible lifestyle choice, despite the fact that they may be able to afford whatever they need sometimes. They just enjoy getting it from you. They get a bigger thrill taking it away from you than getting it themselves. Even though they have the ability to do it, it's just not as thrilling. Seeing that look on your face, though, it's priceless to them. So that's why they crush you under their boot heel and take it away from you. Psychopaths don't even have the most basic understanding of human feelings. They're genetically challenged. They're all messed up. The thing, though, is in her book, Zandra talks about how she was finally able to be able to see that when at one point the man would write memos, which is a stunt that he uses time and again to block any threat to his power and perks, a stunt that he uses to keep people in their place. She said he once wrote a memo. Zandra said the memo was a complete fabrication, drawing on discussions and previous conversations that had never happened. And the smart thing, though, that she did, which I urge all of you, my listeners, to do, is she recognized it and she said, this memo taught me to document the man's directives at all times. See, that's the other piece. If they're over here doing something, you can document it so that when the time comes, you can prove you indeed did what they asked you to do or indeed did not do what they're pretending that you did. You have to document. Document, document, document. And they get jealous. They get really, really jealous, so you have to watch out. You know, and be careful, because if they catch you, man, she talks about, there's this one part in the book, in Zandra's book, that I got a kick out of, because she said her film pitches to the man went nowhere, and in any event, a worker bee invited her to work the red carpet, and she interviewed one of her favorite actors, and that was Nicolas Cage, who is one of my favorite actors, too, by the way. I love Nick Cage. This event, she says, was an under-the-radar coup that no one at the plantation even knew about. So she was able to interview Nicolas Cage at the 39th Annual Chicago International Film Festival. She went, she worked, she took some really great photos, and she got away with it, or so she thought. She returned to the plantation the following morning to the security guard's greeting of, hey, I saw you on television interviewing Nick Cage. What? She goes, in shock. Yeah, CLTV played it all day over the weekend. So you know, right then, in the lobby, before she even went upstairs, she knew her ass was grass. She knew she was in trouble. She knew that the man was going to get her now. And she couldn't lie, because they'd been playing it in a loop all weekend. So that's the other thing. What will happen then is someone like the man or bully or psychopath will realize, holy crap, that should have been me. I should have been meeting Nicolas Cage, and then they will punish you. They will punish you at work. They will make you suffer. Like in the case where Zandra mentions that later on, other associate editors got mad at her because it was her fault that they didn't get to meet Babyface, because after that, see, the man locked it all down. You know, I'm sure he met Babyface just fine, but not her. She asked the question, what kind of vengeful boss plays games with editorial deadlines just to stick it to their own subordinate? I can tell you. Zandra, let me tell you who. A bullying psychopath, that's who. That's who can do that. Because they don't care about what happens to the magazine. They don't care what happens to their subordinate. They only care about one person. And that's themselves. Nobody but them. They're the me, me, me people. They're the ones that only focus on what's in it for moi. She said she finally quit, and that her resignation raised eyebrows, as it was correspondent that was CC'd to the 9th floor, which was strictly forbidden. Plantation business remained on the plantation. Fascinating. Black people treating each other this way. Fascinating and sad. Very, very sad. Because that's the last thing that we thought that the organization stood for. We thought it stood for pulling us up. But I'd heard some stories before I read the book. I had heard some stories about that, because after I got the and read Living the Ebony Life, emails from the plantation, I actually did a search and found that if you go online and you Google and you look for stories like that about people who work at Ebony, you find that that happened a lot. Sandra wasn't the only person that it happened to, actually. It happened to other people, too. It happened to people who also, other people who wrote books about it. It happened to men, too. There is a man, as a matter of fact, that wrote a book about how he was treated very, very poorly at Ebony Magazine, too. And he was a young man who believed that he could trust them and believed that he was in the right place doing the right thing. And at the end of the day, they messed with him too. And he wound up having to leave the company. I think he might have even been fired. They brought in people underneath him and had those people just roll all over them. So that got me thinking, well, maybe that's their methodology. That's their organization's culture. That's what we do here. It's a wonderful place to work. As long as you love getting stepped on, then we're the ones for you. I really, really hope that going forward, the organization changes that style, or whoever buys them changes that style, because it's going to hurt them down the road. So the best thing would be for them to go in there and clean house. That's what I think they should do. Go in there and clean house and get some people in there with some character, some people who actually give a damn about the people like me who loved the magazine and read it all the time. We want to make sure that we get the best content, that we get the best information. We want to make sure that the articles are fabulous and the photographers are the best and the stories are touching, and that when a young person comes and joins the organization, that young person will have the opportunity to move forward in their career and be successful. Because based on that book, Living the Ebony Life, Emails from the Plantation, it doesn't sound like the kind of place where anybody's going to be nurtured, where anybody's going to be pulled up to the next level and have their talents and skills cradled and carried around so that they have the pipeline filled with wonderful, high-quality, talented people for the next generation who are going to be editing and writing and working with this magazine. So I hope those new people do that. They should clean house, get some decent people in there who care about not just the organization, but people like me, the readers. We readers deserve better. I'm serious. We really do. We have the right as readers to get the best. And the best of the best. Otherwise, it's just not fair, you know? It's just not right. So we have 15 minutes remaining, and I'd like to use the 15 minutes to talk a little bit about something more uplifting and positive than what we've been talking about so far. Because this whole plantation style of separating the hierarchy and the staff in an organization is, as I just said, one that will fail. Let's look at what are things that you could do if you're in a organization where these are the kinds of people that you work with. If you're dealing with bullies, I want you to understand that you're not alone. They typically don't bully only one person. They bully people across different departments, across different teams. And I also want you to understand that you have recourse. There are things that you can do to fix it. I encourage you to go to www.bullyinginstitute.org and then go to the bottom of that webpage and you'll see things that says Healthy Workplace Bill. And when you click on that, the map of the United States will come up and you can see your state and see where they are in the process. You can see whether they have, like Illinois does, already on the books laws that can protect you. And then you can contact the Institute and see what you can do to fix the problem. That is, if you can't just find yourself another job and get the heck out of there, which is the second best thing. I also would like to encourage you to read that book, Snakes in Suits, When Psychopaths Go to Work. It's really, really excellent. And there's another book that I will talk about another time. It's called The Sociopath Next Door. And that is by Martha Stout, PhD, who says that 1 in 25 ordinary Americans are sociopaths. So if you know more than 25 people, I want you to know right now one of them is a sociopath. So it's going to be helpful for you to be able to understand who they are and recognize what that behavior looks like. The Sociopath Next Door. I will speak to that in another radio broadcast. She says, 1 in 25 individuals are sociopathic, meaning essentially they do not have a conscience. Without the slightest blip of guilt or remorse, 1 in 25 people can do anything at all. Anything. You probably know somebody who's like that. We'll talk about that book. I'll see if I can get her as our guest in 2011 so she can tell us about the book. It's really excellent. And you can read all of this information and more at my blog, which is just go to my name, my website, which is www.YvonneFBrown, B-R-O-W-N, like the color, YvonneFBrown.com. And when you get there, you'll see there's a menu item that says blog. Click on the blog, and it'll take you straight to that article, that blog post, The Sociopath, The Psychopath, and The Bully at Work. And when you get there, I would like you to scroll down to the bottom. Scroll down, and on the right-hand side, you'll see opportunity there for you to click the Follow This Blog button so you're updated whenever there's a new blog post. You'll see a thing that says Networked Blogs, and it'll help you get updated whenever I put a new blog post. And so that is our show for today. I'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Find Yourself, Live Your Dreams, and Be Happy show. Our next show is our Getting the New Year Started Right show, and we're cooking up something special for you, so stay tuned. Have a wonderful holiday season, and make a list of things you're grateful for. And then set your plans for the new year. One of the things I do for the new year, and I highly recommend that you do that too, is I sit down and I make a list of everything that I was grateful for in the prior year. I make a list of all of my accomplishments for that year, and then I make a second list of what would I like to accomplish in the next 12 months, in the upcoming year. I don't do New Year's resolutions. I do a gratitude list, and I do a wish list that I'm sending out to the universe to say, bless me with these things. They're what I want for the year, and I'm going to go for them, and I need you on my side. Because, you know, it's a powerful universe. It's a cornucopia, and you can have anything that you want. But first, you have to know what you want. So that's what that second list is for. I'm your host, Yvonne Brown, coming to you from Chicago, Illinois. And I'll see you next month on the second Saturday at 2 p.m. Central Time. Until then, I'll leave you with these words. Anyone can achieve their fullest potential. Who you are might be predetermined, but the path you follow is always of your own choosing. You should never allow your fears or the expectations of others to set the frontiers of your destiny. Your destiny can't be changed, but it can be challenged. So, be sure to find yourself, live your dreams, and be happy. Remember to tune in next month. In the meantime, visit me online at www.YvonneFBrown.com, YvonneFBrown.com, and use the contact page to share with me what other topics you would like to hear on the show. Thank you so much for listening, and I will see you next year.
Thank you for joining us today. If you have a topic that you would like to learn more about, please send it to me at Yvonne@YvonneFBrown.com. You may also use the contact page at www.YvonneFBrown.com, YvonneFBrown.com. To share your comments about today's program or to ask me a question. Until next time, this is Yvonne Brown saying, each day you have the opportunity to get out there on life's playing field or sit on the sidelines. It's always more rewarding to get in the game and play.